Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 36. Welcome. Bienvenidos. Hello. Konnichiwa. Aloha.
Yes. What up?
Bonjour.
Bon Jovi.
That's a very small language
mm-hmm.
That's only in New Jersey.
Only in New Jersey.
They only speak that in New Jersey.
I don't want to speak it anywhere else.
I don't think anyone should speak it.
No.
Period.
No, that's true. I think Bon Jovi's the reason that people hate New Jersey.
No, there's lots of other reasons.
Are there? I don't know. I've never been.
My family's from Jersey.
That explains so much.
Well, South Jersey, like, it's very close to Philadelphia.
Uh-huh.
So it's actually, like, relatively, like, a rural, suburban kind of place. It's not, like, the thing you think of in New Jersey. Like, when you think of New Jersey, you think of, like, factories and, like, the mob.
Mm-hmm.
That's more like North Jersey and mid-central North Jersey. Which is very shitty. Like Newark and all those places.
Mm-hmm.
Those are. But South Jersey's nice. Nice enough. There's lots of corn.
You're really painting a great word picture there. I can't wait to go see the corn.
It's my family. I've been there many, many times. It's nice.
Excellent.
But I was going to say, we were playing Rock Band last night, and Kim did Bon Jovi Wanted, Dead or Alive.
Wait, who's Kim?
Kim is a sentient beach volleyball.
Weird. That's never really happened before, has it?
I guess not. I bought a volleyball at Target and brought it home, and it started talking. And like,
you would think it would be called Wilson, but it's called Kim.
They hate that.
That's just not. It's not funny, huh?
No, they hate that movie. They hate you calling him Wilson.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, they've heard it a million times. That joke is old.
Hmm.
But anyway,
well, I apologize to her people for bringing it up.
Yeah, she was singing that Bon Jovi song, and in the words it says, "A loaded six string on my back." I've never really thought about it, but that's really dumb. I understand it's supposed to be like a loaded six gun,
yes,
and all that. But
yes.
How do you load a guitar? Bon Jovi doesn't play guitar; he sings. There's just problems.
Well,
you don't have any thoughts on this, Eric? Never thought deeply about Bon Jovi lyrics?
I have not. I will say that thinking about them is making me a little queasy. What kind of steel horse do you ride on, Robbie?
That makes more sense to me because people actually do call motorcycles steel horses.
Those people are also fucking dumb. They probably listen to Bon Jovi.
They probably do, but I'm just like, it's not a bite. No one, I've never heard anyone else say, "Oh yeah, I carry a loaded six string on my back.
I'm a badass with a guitar."
I know, I carry a guitar around. It does not make you a cowboy. Many people carry guitars around.
I think so.
I saw one riding down the road on his bicycle the other day on the way to work.
A bicycle and a guitar.
In the cold.
In the cold. Was he wearing jorts?
He was not. He was wearing like cold clothes.
Cold clothes? Because it's 45 degrees outside and it's in Florida and everyone's God.
I was gonna add a comment saying it's Florida cold.
Yes, Florida cold.
It's for South Florida, it is very cold.
Yes.
It never gets like, even being here 6 months, I'm like, it's never Like, it's even compared to Central Florida, it's not cold.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
You get closer and closer to the equator.
It gets warmer somehow.
The nights get hotter.
Ooh.
Science happens.
Science. The nights. That sounds like a promo for a new drama set in South Florida, but it's about scientists and the weather.
Yes, and they're doing it in the dark in South Florida. Science.
Science. Man. We need to write this down. That's a good idea.
I think so. All the terrible ideas for TV shows that we come up with.
They're no worse than anything that's on TV now.
I know. That's why we're brilliant. So. How's life there?
It's good. We're good. Everything's good. Anyway, folks, we got a good show, I think. I'm excited.
I think we have a terrible show, and I'm ashamed of us.
That's
what you never hear.
It's true. Eric's lying, though, because this is amazing.
I am deceitful.
He's like a Loki kind of.
I am.
Trickery.
Mm-hmm.
Trickeries.
But I look handsome with a hammer, so no one really knows. They're both my spirit animal.
They're hidden in his beard and mustache.
Truly.
That's where you need to. Ladies, if you're looking for his trickeries. That's where they are.
Men.
I'm not going to judge men too. They can.
Oh my!
So you do it good.
Yeah, it's among my many skills.
Right. We're going to jump in and checking in and stop dicking around. I'm going to start off. I got just one thing to check in with a game. That it is called Stick It to the Man. I have it on Steam. It is a platformer, sort of an adventure game. The closest thing I can think of is Little Big Planet.
Ah, Little Big Planet.
Yes, it is. That's the closest thing I can relate it to. It's the premise is this. It has a very weird sense of humor that you see a lot in the Double Fine games. Psychonauts is the game that the sense of humor and dialogue is closest to.
Mm-hmm.
But basically it's this guy gets hit in the head with this alien device dropped from a government plane. A parasite moves into his brain and now he can read people's minds and has this a spaghetti noodle arm floating above his head and he can grab stuff and read minds. And then he can grab ideas from people in their head.
Huh.
And then and use them as stickers and solve problems. It's very weird. It's kind of just has a very weird art style.
I was going to say it's got an incredibly strange art style.
Yeah.
It's pretty Muppety.
Yeah. It's like that. It's written by Ryan North, who writes Dinosaur Comics and Adventure Time comics. And all that. And that's how I heard about it. I saw it on his blog. And I was like, oh, that seems interesting. And I checked it out. It's very fun so far. It's a very nice, fun game. My only complaint, maybe, is that it's a little too easy. I don't know how far I am into it. Maybe it gets harder as you go. It's not really, I don't think it's a game designed to be difficult. It's just a game to experience the fun and the humor.
It's just a weird ideas and a weird game mechanic.
Yeah, the game mechanic is really interesting and fun. I think that's what sets it apart. But that's all I got. Oh. Eric, what do you got to check in with, Eric?
Oh, very cool. The only thing that I've experienced lately, one thing that I'm interested in and one thing that I'm actually in the middle of experiencing, when I was in the eighth grade, I read Dune, Frank Herbert's Dune. You're familiar with the book?
I haven't read it, but I know of it. I know the tropes and...
Well, I got the audiobook of it, and it's one of the most elaborately produced audiobooks that I've ever... there are actually multiple different actors doing different voices, which is pretty fascinating. I'm sort of mixed on it. It's dialogue is really sort of poor, the way that it's written. I don't know. I don't have too much of a memory on it because I was like 11 or 12 or something when I read it the first time. I read it and the follow-up book to it.
I've always... its length and the amount of just stuff in its universe.
Mm-hmm. No, it's
has always been imposing. I'm just like, I don't... It's like that in Ringworld and a lot of those yes. other giant, you know, sci-fi epics. You're like, it's going to be thousands of pages. I don't...
Well, I mean, you have read every book so far in Game of Thrones, and I would say that it's pretty much right on par with that.
Okay.
So, I mean... I don't see what your argument is, but I have some serious issues with the way everyone talks to each other because they don't sound like humans, but I think that's kind of the style that it's going for. Like, it kind of feels a Shakespearean tragedy, almost.
Okay.
In that, like, everyone is sort of talking about this plot that's going to happen, and all these nobles and everything terrible that's going to happen to them. Everyone seems pretty clear what is about to unfold. I don't know. It's weird and it's interesting, and I've really just started and it's super long, so it's going to take me forever to get through it. I don't know how I feel about it, because I really want to like it, and I kind of don't right now.
How far in? Are like the 5th, the 20%? Something 30, 40?
Not even.
Well,
yeah, I might be 15% into it.
Give it more time.
I can give it more time, but these are the things that I'm reacting to. It is some terribly bad dialogue.
I might, now that makes me curious.
It's interesting hearing it read aloud, because these people are exchanging dialogue in a way that is very, very unnatural. Like, they will just say, like, a long soliloquy, and then the other person will respond back with a long soliloquy. It's kind of absurd. Like, no conversation has ever worked like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a lot of people say they love it.
Yeah, and I think that it's got a lot of really fascinating world building and ideas in the same way that, like, your Game of Thrones or... I know of Ringworld, but it's on my to-read list.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of fascinating world building like that, but it's... I sort of just don't enjoy the style that it's written in. I honestly think it's done this way on purpose, but in the same breath, I will also say I don't think that Frank Herbert is really an amazing writer, because book two I remember absolutely despising.
I've heard more mixed things about the sequels and...
Yeah. Like they apparently sharply taper off. He kind of blew his whole wad on the first Dune. I don't know. I'm interested to see where it goes. I will probably be slogging through it for a very long time. It is not as long as the last Game of Thrones book.
Okay, well it's not that bad then.
It was pretty long for a 12-year-old though.
Yeah, I can't imagine reading that as 12. Years old.
Mm-hmm.
Although I read a lot of longer things when I was young too, but I probably didn't get most of it. It just probably went over right over my head.
Yeah.
Well, you said you had something else?
A game that I haven't played, I haven't picked up yet, but I'm fascinated by it, and maybe you saw it because it was on the front page of Steam, the Banner Saga.
I've seen passing mention of it. I have not actually looked into it.
It looks like an RPG, sort of in the same vein of Tactics and XCOM, mm-hmm. Final Fantasy Tactics and XCOM, mm-hmm. except with Vikings.
Okay.
And it's got like a really handsome sort of... The art style reminds me a lot of like Mary Blair and Sleeping Beauty, the Disney film.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a lot of that aesthetic, and I'm really drawn to that. I think it's a really gorgeous-looking game, and I'm fascinated by it, and I might end up picking it up. I just wanted to sort of mention it, see if you had seen it.
I had seen it. I have not. It's always one of those things, well, maybe I'll check it out.
There's too many people making too many great things.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I mean, there's a lot of games I want to... buy, but I've already got so many games that I own that I haven't played all the way through.
Yeah, I have like 60-something games in my Steam library.
Yeah, I'm very interested about State of Decay. I want to check that out, but
okay.
Apparently it sucks up your life. It's a zombie survival game. You play as you play somebody who's trying to build a community to survive, and you recruit new people. You build, you know, barricades and, you know, in an environment, a habitat to, you know, fight off the zombies. The zombies will attack, you know, whenever. And if you die, you take over the control of one of the people you've recruited. You stay dead. You stay dead. That's kind of the big gimmick about it. But apparently, you start playing, you just don't stop. So I've been playing Fallout 3 again for, you know, the 900th hour, so I don't...
It's important to play Fallout 3 more.
Apparently, a game that's like 5 years old at this point.
It's so old. It's crazy how old it is. It's so good, though.
It is. It's really good.
I think it's... I don't know. It'll just sort of live forever in infamy. It's amazing.
It's my favorite game.
It's certainly one of my favorites.
I've played it more than anything else.
Anything ever.
Yeah.
Shooting them super mutants.
Right in the head.
Right in the face.
Right in the noggin.
Yep.
And then they explode.
They do that, and they just fall to pieces like they're stewed meat.
Exactly. A mist hangs, and then there's a torso.
What a disgusting game.
You're just like, oh, they exploded.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes extreme gore and violence.
It's a bit absurd. Well, there we are.
There we are. That's it for checking in. We're going to move on to weekly floppies. Woohoo! We're going to start off with DC. Because I know Eric wants to start off with DC because he loves DC.
I do. I do love Dickie Comics.
What were your exact words last week? I hate the new 52. I think those were your exact words.
I kind of do hate the new 52. I believe I probably said I kind of hate it.
This week was slim pickings if we didn't want to read any Forever Evil books. There were a lot of Forever Evil tie-ins and not much else. So we're going to start off with Justice League 3000, number 2. It's by Keith Giffen, J.M. DeMatteis, and Howard Porter. Sal Cipriano letters. Hi-Fi as the colorists. Whoever Hi-Fi is.
He's a wizard.
Or a company, maybe, that just does colorings.
He's a wizard that makes companies. A wizard entrepreneur.
This issue is seeing the revived Justice League go to this supposedly barren planet and try and... I don't even know what's happening.
Did you read it?
I did. They get sideswiped by the Locust, who's this incredibly powerful lady who falls in love with Green Lantern, and then...
I don't think you mean lady. I think you mean bimbo.
I don't mean bimbo. She's not a bimbo. She's a lady.
She's something.
She's not a nice lady. She's a mean lady. A crazy lady.
She's... Okay. I think there are a lot of people that would describe her a lot less nicely than you are.
I'm trying to be nice and say that she's just a crazy lady who has the power to change anything just by will alone. And she is fighting the Justice League 3000, who are mostly all still dicks to each other.
Yeah.
Aside from Flash and Green Lantern, they're nice. But Wonder Woman's still filled with hate and rage. Superman's still a dick. Batman's... I don't know, still full of himself as well. He's just basically annoying Superman the entire time.
They're all grumpy.
They are. I didn't like this.
I didn't dislike it. Like, I think there's some interesting elements to it, but I don't know that I would recommend it to anyone. Like, I kind of do like this. I don't know. I feel pretty comfortable throwing a bimbo out there.
You can call her whatever you want.
I'm not exactly sure. I don't even know what does bimbo mean. I associate it with stupid blonde women, which she kind of strikes me as that. I don't know. I feel like any way I'm going to describe her, I'm going to be horribly misogynist, and I don't particularly want to be. But she needs to be described in some negative way.
She's crazy and mean.
I feel like a two-year-old describing people as mean.
But she is mean. You're allowed to. You know, you can be 28 or 35 or 400 and still describe
someone. I am not 400. Thank you very much.
You can still describe someone as mean. It's okay. It's not a word to be used exclusively for 5-year olds.
It's hard for me to articulate.
The problem is
she's a very odd character.
She is sort of
like godlike powers. Godlike powers were given to someone with the maturity of like a 17-year-old girl.
Yes, I would agree.
That is sort of.
I don't know. That might be a little too mean to 17-year-old girls because.
I don't think so. Many of them are horrible.
Well, many 17-year-olds in general are horrible.
Oh, I know.
Most teenagers are horrible.
I
was one at one point. I was. Yes. I was not a good thing. I was a mess.
You're a mess. You're a mess now, Robert.
I am, but I'm not as much of a mess. A little bit, but I just don't like. I get the squabbling. It's just mindless at certain point.
Yeah,
I don't like half this issue is just the Wonder Twins fighting, you know, arguing amongst themselves, and then like worrying about them insulting the Justice League, and nothing much happens and then they are dealing with this chick, and she's so powerful that it doesn't even have meaning. Like, here, let's just throw them up against God. That's basically what's happening. Why is, I mean, is there's, if there's no chance of them winning, why is it? And I really don't like the fact, like, her only motivation is keeping, she's just going to keep Green Lantern alive as a sex slave.
Yeah. Yes, that's kind of what I'm getting at here, that her only motivation is, I don't know. I don't know what way to come at this.
She wants to kill people and she wants to fuck people.
Yeah,
and that's all she cares about. That's not a good character.
It's kind of like Starfire, what they turned Starfire into. You know what I mean?
No, I don't. But
do you not? Do you never heard about that whole kerfluffle with like how she's just like empty, like sex person. Like, she's a completely devoid character, a character completely devoid of any thought, and she's just like, whatever, let's bone now.
I've managed to miss that.
I don't think that this is, like, I don't know that this is, like, a weird, like...
Satire?
I don't know, maybe it is?
I don't, it's just...
Because it feels more, it feels, I'm not going to say more artful than that, because it's a little, it feels a little clunky. It feels sort of dumb and empty like that. Like, it's not really well thought out. I don't know.
It does feel dumb and empty.
Yeah. It's difficult for me to articulate really quite how it makes me feel. But I don't think it's not exactly knocking it out of the park here.
No, I was going to give this a sec. I mean, it's the same team, same writers of Laura Flees, which we both like a lot.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'll give it a shot. We'll keep reading. I don't like this. I mean, the only thing I like about it is the little funny, like, Bruce Wayne quipping about, you know, he refuses to call Superman. He calls him Clark.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I thought was enjoyable in this. The rest of it was pretty dumb. The art is okay for the most part.
I enjoy it to an extent. I don't think it's, like, uncanny or brilliant. It's not going to inspire me to go off and paint a million paintings. I do like the character designs. I said that when we read the last one, but
yeah.
I'm not terribly blown away by it.
There's just one page 17, Superman's fist is literally like the size of a cement block. Every time I look at it, it bothers me.
What page?
17, on the bottom.
Believe it's supposed to be coming forward in space, but it is easily as big as her head.
Yeah,
he's got big ham hands there. It's as big as his head too.
I know.
Most people's fists are smaller than their heads.
Most.
But I mean, I don't know. If we're really going to criticize anatomy, nothing in superhero comics is very
accurate.
You know, anatomically correct.
No.
Or atomically correct, which is what I was going to say, because I'm dumb. Atomically correct. 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 Correct.
I know. We don't have to go. I am a do not buy on this Justice League 3000 number two.
This has been a very self-indulgent conversation we've just had about this book.
Yeah.
Do not buy it. I don't think it's... I don't know. I think that the irreverence is... It works well on Larfleeze. It doesn't work well on these characters that we know and love and expect to be treated a certain way.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's you can feel sort of their competence. It's just sort of bad at the premise level.
Yeah, it's kind of unfixable at a certain point.
Right.
Double don't buy.
Next up is a little departure for us. This is Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Number 41.
What the hell, man?
Story art and cover by Scott Gross. And colors by Heroic Age. What do you think, Eric? Did you like this? Did you enjoy reading this?
Jinkies.
I knew you were going to do that.
Well, duh.
Ruh-roh.
This comic surprised me a little bit. I was
pretty delighted by it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
It's funny, it's stupid, it's really well drawn. Why did you pick this one? Specifically this one.
Well, if you looked at what was coming out for DC this week, there was not many... My choices, outside of a Forever Evil or a Forever Evil tie-in, was this, an Astro City book, which we've read before and we always love... And it's in the middle of a story. It's like issue 3 of a four issue arc. A Green Lantern story, which did not seem very interesting to me. Or I don't know if there's anything else, honestly. And I was like, I've heard things about this Scooby-Doo book. Let's give it a shot.
It's very well done. I hate Scooby-Doo.
I didn't know that.
I think it's a terrible. I don't hate it like I hate Archie. I just hate it because it's bad television. Sort of like at a strange premise level, I think it's an interesting show. I think it's got interesting like elements to it, but this is a well-done comic. I like the way that the characters are drawn. It's stylized in sort of a European comic sort of way, and I really enjoy that about it. It's all written and drawn. This first story written and drawn by one guy.
Yes, Scott Gross.
He's pretty badass.
He drew he didn't write the second, but he did draw it, or at least did the pencils. The third story was Keith Champagne writing and Scott Neely with pencils. But there's three little stories in this. The first one's by far the largest. The rest are just kind of explorations of like weird monster fables.
I really liked the Velma's Monsters of the World in the middle.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I love how the monsters look like they're straight out of Hellboy.
Yeah.
I think that kind of enhances it. Like, I think that there needs to be a Scooby-Doo Hellboy crossover.
As long as Scooby-Doo is own... I guess Dark Horse could license it as another book. I don't know if DC owns exclusive rights to Scooby-Doo or not.
You tell me that wouldn't make sense.
It would make sense. It makes very good sense.
They fucking... If they met Batman...
They did. They did meet Batman. But it's a fun, kind of silly little comic book. It works for all ages. It's actually educational. You actually do learn things in it. It works within the Scooby-Doo framework, but it doesn't... Yeah. It's not so predictable that it's boring.
I would let a kid read this. It's a pretty solid book.
Yeah, this is definitely a book to get kids to read.
Mm-hmm. I'm just so shocked that you picked it out. The art is really rich. I really love this. I hate to say splash page because it's not a splash page, but you know the full page illustration of Scooby-Doo.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is effing gorgeous. That is a great piece of art. This is like a weird gem out of nowhere. It's just, I don't know. It's so surreal you picked it, but I'm kind of glad you did.
Yeah, I wanted to try new things. It works.
Branching out. What's that all about? I know.
So I'm a Scooby-Doo. Where are you, number 41? I'm a buy. This is really good.
I am. Maybe I'm a reluctant buy. I don't know. I would certainly. I don't know. It's weird. It's kind of hard for me to say buy, but it is. I can. It is a good book.
Yeah. It's. I would say you like Scooby-Doo. Definitely pick it up. You looking for a comic book for kids to read? Great for it, I would say. And it's if you're like stupid adults like us who like silly, you know, fun comic books, look into it. It's good.
I still think there needs to be Scooby-Doo meets Hellboy. I think it'd be tremendous.
Write it down. Pitch it at Dark Horse.
Yes.
Double buy.
Our next book is first of two indie books of the week, and it is Egos, number one. Written by Stuart Moore, with art and colors by Gus Storms. Did everything. Letters by Rob Steen. This book, at its core, is about like an old superhero team that they're in like a sci-fi setting that is regrouping in current day to fight off a giant menace. But of course, what do you think about this, Eric? I am very curious about what you think. If you like it or not. I cannot peg if you can or not.
Well, I have enjoyed flipping through it. I particularly the beginning sort of pages I like. I always like the device of, giving the ending away and then you're like intrigued and you have to work towards it. And I liked how irreverent the narrator is. It's got some sort of weird, like, vanilla structure to it, you know. Some of the characters strike me as a little sort of plain, and there are some points where the artist just feels incredibly lazy, and it really bothers me.
Where?
Just some of the drawing, just that, like, they lack any sort of, like, you can draw a very simple character and make them look amazing. Like, you don't have to just pack so much detail into stuff that, you know, but this guy doesn't have that kind of drawing skill where he can draw something simply and have it look amazing. He has to sort of just draw and draw and draw and draw. And there are a lot of panels where he just doesn't draw things right, and it is really sort of annoying to me. Okay. Like, what, let me see what number, this is page 13, like, what was her name, I think they called her Pixel.
Yeah.
It's like, she's got her hand reaching over the chair, and it isn't drawing her fingers.
No, that's right.
This is a great example of, like, her face is, it just completely lacks detail, the lines look really sort of clumsy, the mark making's very clumsy to me, it just looks amateurish. Like I said, you can draw something simple, but you have to crush it. You have to have superior drawing skill. And this person doesn't. They're sort of in between needing to draw, like, so much detail that you don't care, or, you know, drawing something so simple. And it just looks lazy in a lot of points. I think a lot of the problems that I have with this are the same problems that I have with... it makes me think of the Jeff Lemire drawings that I didn't like.
Okay. I was going to say, this reminds me of that a little bit.
Yes, I think that's probably what's doing it. There's maybe, I don't even know if you could call that a style, because it looks like bad drawing to me. But I mean, I'm not going to say that every part of this book is awful, because I think when there is more detail in a panel, it is distracting from the bad drawing, and I enjoy it more.
What do you think about the plot? I don't have any kind of contention with the art for the most part. I thought it was okay.
It's hard for me to really say a whole heck of a lot. It sort of feels like so little is revealed, and what is revealed is kind of, like I said, it feels a little vanilla.
Yeah, I'm just You remember what you were when we had our yelling match about Coffin Hill,
mm-hmm.
and you said, you know, it has.
Did we have a yelling match about that? I don't remember.
I'm sure we did.
Uh huh.
We both were. You know,
okay.
We both stuck to our guns, but
we were jerky about it.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Dorman.
I feel the same way that you felt about that.
Uh-huh.
It's just there's a lot of stuff happening in this, and it is not focused.
Huh.
That's my problem.
I kind of get that it does seem like, you know, there's all these characters and subplots within, like, the little groups in it, you know, that, and they're trying to cover all this and set all this stuff up. At its heart, it feels like a very simple story about, like, a big bad villain and, like, a team of weird whack jobs that are trying to destroy them, you know? It feels pretty plain, but I think we're going to see a lot of nuance in, like, how weird these characters are and how disturbed they are and how flawed they are.
You were talking about the irreverence of the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
I don't it up until about three quarters of the way through the issue, I'm like, I'm fine with it, and then it just keeps
it gets getting it grates on you.
Yeah, I just okay, and then you find out, oh, it's, you know, you find the relationship between the narrator. How's he knowing all that? Like, there's no, they don't connect the dots enough for me. Certain things you're supposed to just assume, and I understand that you have to have a certain level of that to tell. I think that gets back to my original point where it's just a lot of things are happening and they're trying to set up so many of these subplots. Mm-hmm. And I think if you cut out a little bit of it and made more focus on one of them or two of them, there's a subplot of this one young character the issue starts off with, you know, with the one who's
yeah, that it's barely covered at all.
Yeah, you see her, this character, I don't even know if it's a boy or you think it's a girl? I think it's a girl.
I was going to say it's a girl because...
Yeah, your lazy daughter. It says daughter.
Yeah, how does she do that?
Yeah. You see her occasionally, but she has no... That easily could have been cut out and it had no impact on the rest of this story.
Yes.
And then you have a narrator who's... You don't understand the relationship to the end, near the end, and then it doesn't necessarily tie in about how he's narrating this. Like, if you're going to have someone narrating it, you'd think they'd have they need to have some kind of connection. If they're a third person omnipresent kind of omniscient narrator, they can't be like just a person unless they're watching this on a.
He sort of is narrating it like what we're seeing is he's watching it on a monitor.
I know, but they don't have all this stuff isn't actually happening in front of a camera, but I don't know. I didn't hate it. I just thought there's a lot of potential, and it doesn't mm-hmm. get there.
Yeah. There's interesting things to it. Vanilla big bad superheroes versus big bad story with very flawed superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If anything, I'm a weak buy on this. I mean, I could easily go either way, be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I may give it another issue or two.
Yeah, I think it warrants that because it's interesting. But I think there are enough criticisms that you can make of this, but there are also enough interesting ideas that I think it's worth a little bit more follow-up.
Yeah, I guess I even with my complaints, I'm back where you are. It's like a weak buy.
Yeah, yeah.
Give it a shot and see what if it develops into something. Next book is Rover Red Charlie number 2 by Garth Ennis, Michael D. Pascal on art, letters by Kurt Hathaway. I'm a dog, I'm a dog, I'm a dog, I'm a dog.
I'm a dog, I'm a dog, I'm a dog, I'm a dog. I think more than any comic that we have read... I have told more people about this book. Not this specific one, but, you know, these books. It's the kind of comic that I think can get people into comics. You know, because people just assume that comics, the only genre is superheroes.
Right.
It's
superheroes and Walking Dead, and that's all there is.
Yeah, well, this is actually a lot more. This is Walking Dogs.
It is. It is. I think it's actually more. It moves a lot faster than Walking Dead, which is why I'm liking it. I love the little choice. The story is very simple. Where Rover Red and Charlie are trying to get out of the city.
Yep.
And there's a swarm of chihuahuas.
Why? I think it's so weird that that the dog, he's got an English
accent.
An English accent. Not just accent, but he speaks. Just got a very English vocabulary. He calls them slags.
Yes.
What's up with that? Damn English people writing comics.
He's a British dog, so he speaks like his owner speaks.
I guess he speaks.
He spokes.
I like speaked. Okay. But I think it's hilarious that they say, what about me?
Yeah, what about me? What about me? What about me? What about me?
They're like the things from Finding Nemo. Me.
Yeah, they're like the seagulls.
Mine?
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 Mine, mine. You know, in the German version of that, they say mines.
Mines?
Mines? Mines?
That's interesting.
Yeah, but now this is... them, you see them doing kind of warfare with a legion of cats.
Yes. There's some fairly evil cats.
Yeah, fairly evil.
Although I think that it's actually provable that dogs actually are smarter than cats. That it's just a weird perception thing.
I think it's highly dependent on breed, and
I think that's true too, but I have heard that like everyone's perception is that cats are smarter, but I don't think so.
It's a dumb argument.
It is a fucking dumb argument, isn't it?
You can't. I don't.
So
know.
Let's talk about it for an hour.
Just no one goes. You know, is a dolphin smarter than an elephant?
Ooh, they don't. That's a good question.
I don't. It doesn't matter. Elephants and dolphins need entirely different skills to survive. It does not matter if there's like a cat. A cat lives they're solitary animals, at least domestic cats. Dogs are pack animals. Like, they're not the same.
I think that it is an interesting question to ask, just simply because you're asking questions about, you know, what is the nature and the limits of these animals' intelligence.
Nature of intelligence itself is
yes,
more interesting to me.
That's what that question is about to me. But we're talking about a comic book.
Yes, we are.
Now I'm going to quit and go to grad school and write about these animals' intelligence. And I'm going to write about elephants and dolphins.
Okay, cool. That's good. Let me know when you're done your thesis.
Fuck you, Dorman. I'm out.
I guess I'm talking about this by myself now.
Okay, I'm back.
Oh, cool. How was your thesis?
I'm back to read Walking Dogs with you.
Walking Dogs. You're following three dogs trying to survive, like, an apocalypse situation. Garth Ennis knows how to write comic books.
He does. He's a sweet, sweet man.
If you're going to ask me about one really famous comic writer who's going to write about, you know, three dogs being dogs, I would not pick Garth Ennis.
No.
He does a very good job.
Warren Ellis wouldn't do it because he's terrified of dogs.
He really is?
I thought I told you about this.
You did not tell me about this.
I swear to God, we talked about it on the podcast already.
I don't remember this at all.
That Warren Ellis, at a panel that a friend of mine went to, told a story about how he's terrified of dogs because he witnessed a dog attack and eat his brother's face.
Now that's coming back to me a little bit, but okay. That is terrifying.
The punchline of the story is his brother loves dogs.
Sounds like a Warren Ellis story too.
Yeah.
That sounds exactly like he would say.
Well, that's what happened.
The art is still good. I still like it.
It's as nice as it was in the other book.
Yeah, it's the same.
I think that there's some lazy not getting reference drawing in this book. I was always taught to draw what you see and not what you know. This guy's drawing what he knows. Like, there are some mannerisms, like when the cat points with its paw.
Yeah.
That is not how a cat would raise its foot. You know, stupid stuff like that.
Right.
That I feel could be done more convincing. All in all, it's a good book. I mean, it's a comic, and you can kind of forgive interiors for looking a little sloppy because they have to do it under such a tight time frame that they can't get every nuance perfect. Mm-hmm. But it's got a little bit of messiness to it. And for the record, cats can swim.
Yeah, I'm aware.
Yeah, I mean, that just really strikes me as weird. Cats can swim. If a cat needed to swim to live, it would swim.
Yeah, it would not sink like a stone.
It would not. But it would be angry, but it would swim.
It'd be very upset or very sad. Yes. That is the two reactions I've gotten with cats in water.
Yes.
They either get very sad or very angry.
Yes.
And either way, they want out.
Yes.
It's just the either if they want to get out when they're sad, they don't try and hurt you. If they're angry, they will hurt you to get out of the water.
Take that feeder.
Take that feeder. I'm a buy River Red Charlie number 2.
It is it. Like I said, this is the comic that you offer to your friends that don't like comics.
As long as they don't mind some animal gore.
It is gory. It is not a book for kids.
That's my caveat. Like a lot of people. I mean, people I know, like, they'll can read the goriest shit ever if it involves humans. Mm-hmm. If there's a dog corpse or an animal corpse and it gets hurt or whatever, no, they are out.
You know, that's what people were upset about when Wolfenstein 3D was out.
I did not.
You know, it's a game about shooting war criminals in the face.
It is.
And, you know, there's, like, horrible stuff and theoretically... I don't know. Anything that you could find objectionable about it, and most people were upset because there were attack dogs and you had to shoot them or knife them in the face.
And the recent discussion about the new Call of Duty, because it has a dog in it.
Uh-huh.
Like, everyone, as soon as they announce there's going to be a dog in it, everyone's like, oh, that dog's going to die, isn't it?
Goodness.
People are just, I mean, I'm susceptible to the same thing. I can deal with it. I can, like, watch it, but...
I think that there needs to be a cute mouse medic that dies in every comic.
Well, it's not over.
Including, they
haven't encountered a mouse yet, but they may. We just got to think of the cute name that Ennis is going to be talking about for what they call mice.
Mm-hmm.
I like they call chihuahuas me dogs.
They call them me dogs.
They're me dogs.
There is something genuinely wrong about like the little tiny dogs. Like they breed them so small that their brains don't kind of work. That's what I was thinking about. That those are like the
the teacup dogs.
They're fucked up.
They have a lot of medical issues and they aren't smart.
Yeah, like they're dumber than a bag full of hammers.
Like any mutt off the street, 10 times smarter.
Yep. Easily.
Double buy.
That's it for indie books. We're going to go on to Marvel. And first one up is Miracle Man number 1. With story by the original writer.
I know, that's the whole reason you picked it.
I've never read Miracle Man, so I'm very interested in
catching the original book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the deluxe digital edition, so there's tons of shit in it, but it has the first issue from 85, plus a whole bunch of like tie-in issues from various other like annuals and story collections and stuff. Plus a whole bunch of interviews with Mick Anglo that are make Joe Quesada look like he's a fucking saint. And
yeah.
Did you catch the quote about Mick Anglo going, you know, if I had a friend when I was a kid, it would have been you, Joe.
That's adorable.
Fucking make Joe Quesada look like he's the best person ever.
Yeah, well.
They have, you know, some original stories from you know the 50s of Marvel Man, who's this Miracle Man and Marvel Man. That's the whole dispute about the name and the ownership between Marvel and DC and blah 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 blah. But the main chunk of this is the first issue of the series that came out in 85, written by the original writer A.K.A. Alan Moore, art by Gary Leach, and it reminds me of Supreme.
Yeah, it's very Supreme.
Yeah, where this whole first issue, except for maybe the last page, is set in like the style of a golden age comic book. You know, it's where it's kind of clunkier dialogue, and you know, there's several teen characters, and they're traveling through time, and weird time continuities. But then at the very last page, you get this weird, I don't know, quote from Nietzsche.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it looks like it's about to delve into like some this character's insanity or something. Which actually redeemed most of the story, because I'm like, I understand this came out in 1985, so this hadn't been done to death by then.
Mm-hmm.
Where like the faux use of storytelling from, you know, previous eras.
Well,
we just saw in Batman last week where they did the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I Alan Moore can do it. I think if anyone has right to invent it, it was I believe he was the original writer.
He was the original writer. It says so.
Yeah. I mean, it's right there in black and white.
But I'm from what I've heard, this original series, it's really, really good. And I mean, if just not even for... I mean, the big selling point was, oh, unreleased stuff from Neil Gaiman. Everything I've heard about it is... The whole thing is really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to find because it's out of print. So...
And now it's going to be reprinted.
Reprinted, so...
Whoopity-doo-dah.
I liked it.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable.
It's wacky, and I...
Yeah.
I like how... I think that was kind of my favorite part, is how he's talking to his wife and he's describing the things that happened to him back in the 50s. He's basically describing this golden age comic to his wife, and she's like, "That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard." Yes. And she just laughs in his face. I adore that. That's so great. And he says the word atomic backwards.
That's how you become Miracle Man.
It is.
That's all you gotta do.
He says Kimoda.
Uh-oh. Are you Miracle Man now?
I was always a Miracle Man.
Oh. I can't deny that.
Of course you can't.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a good story. Hopefully not every of these issues costs like $6 or whatever. Because I might not be so enthusiastic after a while.
Well,
if every single one is
the original,
supersized.
The original writer needs to get his cash.
I'm not sure if his royalties are any part of that.
He probably has declined any.
Yeah.
He doesn't even want his name on it. I don't know. I wonder.
I don't want to get paid with your superhero money.
What a nut.
But I'm a buy. Miracle Man #1.
I do think that people should buy this.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to... After a while... I mean, after a few issues, I might just wait for...
Mm-hmm.
I know it's coming out. They're like several issues at a time.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be, you know, waiting around forever for the newer stuff, but the unreleased stuff, I should say. But still, Miracle Man #1. It's a buy. It's definitely the big release of the week.
Well worth reading. It's a very old comic.
Yeah. It's strangely enough.
Double buy.
The last book of the week is us revisiting something we read before, giving it another shot, after the first one sucked awfully. And this is Thunderbolts #20. Or #1, if you want. I mean, their Marvel now numbering is very strange.
I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, it has a big number big #1 in the right-hand corner. No Mercy #1, but then it says 20 in the bottom right-hand
side. Is that supposed to be like the arc #1, like I don't know, that's confusing. It should say one of something if that's what it is, but I assume that it's not based on what you're saying.
It's like the Marvel Now relaunch, quote unquote. I don't know how I haven't seen what the new, like, after what they're going to look like, if they're going to say 21 and then #2, or I don't know what's going to work, how it works. Either they should, I don't have a problem with them renumbering it starting at ones. I don't care about that at all. I do have a problem with them doing both at the same time.
Yeah.
Choose one or the other. Either it's 20 or it's 1. It's not both.
Add them together and it's 21.
If you want to do the Hellboy thing where they just start new with every arc, that works too. Just do that. Choose a path. But it's written by Charles Soule, art by Carlo Barbary, colors by Israel Silva, letters by Joe Sabino. The Thunderbolts on a road trip.
It's what's happening.
That's what's happening in this. They're fighting robots in a military base, and that's the main most of this story, and them kind of just being a team. It's better than that first issue.
It is, but that is, I think, not saying a whole hell of a lot.
No,
I don't think it's not horrible, but it is not great. It's just
I was gonna say it's not bad. There's some clever stuff in it.
Yeah,
and there's also some kind of stuff where I'm just like.
Do you know what this reminds me of? Is what is it that we read? Uncanny X-Force. It's this same kind of team up, wet work scenario.
Right.
Except this completely lacks the gravitas that it has.
Yeah, it's clearly trying to go for the opposite direction and try and be, you know, kind of irreverent
mm-hmm.
a little bit. You certainly see that with, I mean, obviously, Deadpool is not, Deadpool is full on, you know, not maybe full on Daniel Way Deadpool, but he's close.
Yeah.
You know, wearing a pimp hat. Pimp hat, yeah. I like the art a lot better.
Yeah, it's pretty decent art. It's, I mean, it's nothing fabulous, but it's good.
It does. Elektra doesn't have Dylan face.
That is true.
Elektra looks like a female.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I kind of am intrigued by the them all going to hell. That's.
It kind of makes me roll my eyes. What intrigues you about it?
A lot of it's probably from reading. Rick Remender's Venom run, which mm-hmm. went into Colin Bunn's Venom run, which is what we were reading.
Yes.
So it ended. And there's a whole big... You see that on the last page, Red Hulk has a pentagram on his chest?
Yes.
There's a whole bunch of backstory about that, and, you know, Venom had the same thing, and then it got transferred to Andy when we were reading
mm-hmm.
in those last few issues of Venom. That's why I'm interested, just because maybe it'll explore that a little bit. About they're like one of the chosen, and how it relates to hell and its mm-hmm. power structure and power struggles. If it explores that, I'm kind of interested. If it's just a standard, like, you know, these guys are fighting demons. If it's not Fraser Irving
mm-hmm.
drawing it, I'm not terribly interested otherwise. That's really why I'm interested, just to see if it goes into that at all. Continuity.
Fair enough.
But that's, I mean... If you haven't read all that stuff.
Speaking of well, not speaking of continuity, but speaking of things making sense. What the hell? Why does Red Hulk, why does he turn into a guy wearing bicycle shorts and then he turns back into army guy?
Thunderbolt Ross.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't, I mean, like you just think that he disappears. It's so dumb. Like he doesn't have torn clothes or anything. They just teleport away.
You see him maybe putting like a jacket on in that one page when he comes back. Maybe he just has a change of clothes with him.
It's so senseless to me.
I don't even pay attention to that, the clothing thing
anymore. I mean you're obviously not meant to.
Especially with the Hulk, it's just
I know. It's one of those things that you're just supposed to look the other way. You're supposed to ignore the man in the behind the curtain.
No one ever uses the bathroom in comic books either, and we never talk about that.
Well, I mean, most stories don't really need to involve someone going to the bathroom. I don't think it's unique to comic books.
That's true. Although Pulp Fiction,
yes,
you know, it's something that it's very important when someone goes to the bathroom.
It is.
I don't even know how I feel about this. I guess I don't buy.
Yeah, it is worth reading. I would not go out of my way to buy it or to recommend it to anyone. I am sort of intrigued and kind of want to see where it's going. Just because I want to, I don't know. It's thoroughly average in my opinion.
Yeah, it's. That's generally my feelings as well. It's a lot better.
Yes.
Then I'll say that it's much improved over to go from where it was to just average.
Yeah.
Quite
that's
a feat.
That's a actually. Big step up.
Yeah. It went from like a 22F to like a 76C.
Mm-hmm.
That's my feelings.
Yeah, it's a bad book.
We're both don't buys. It's not terrible, but it's not great.
Yeah, it's yes. Yes.
Yes.
Word.
Double don't buy.
I also want to mention a few other things, omissions that we didn't read in my explanations. And Rat Queens 4 came out this week. It's gotten great reviews. I read it. It was great. It's great. Every time we've read it, it's great. By now, you know that we love it. Go buy it every week. It's going to be good.
I actually haven't been buying them. I should... I'll probably wait for a trade, honestly.
Yeah, I'm just saying, if you're the person who reads comics, I mean, if you're the serial buyer, it's good. It's good every week. I just don't... After a while, we're just... we're going to be saying the same things about it. Superior Spider-Man 25 came out this week. Also, it's... We're going to have... It's a very eventful... this is a spoiler warning. Eric, do you want me to tell you what happens in it, or do you want to read it in your own?
Well, go ahead and spill some beans. You can spoil it for me.
Okay. This is a spoiler word for those who've not read Superior Spider-Man. It's kind of been spoiled already because of
the announcement.
Yeah, of obviously, just like everyone said, a new Amazing Spider-Man book coming out right before the new movie comes out.
Yep.
Called Amazing Spider-Man, not Superior, Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It has Peter Parker has a Peter Parker look on his face. He's smiling and, you know, earnestly, you know, flying it through the air in a very poorly drawn Humberto Ramos cover.
Yuck.
Yeah. But Peter Parker makes his presence known in 25. In his mind. He's still there. He's not dead. He's still there. Venom gets back to Flash Thompson. That's the big things that happen. We're going to say the same things we said about it the last couple times we read it. That it's very competent. We don't care too much for Doc Ock Spider-Man or these types of stories. Venom is detached from this story now. He's not coming back to Superior Spider-Man. Superior Spider-Man's only going to be around for a few more issues, I suppose, unless they do a thing where Doc Ock keeps going as another Spider-Man, which makes no sense, but who knows? It's Humberto Ramos mm-hmm. again drawing, and it's not.
Is it announced who's going to do the art for the new Amazing? Yeah,
I imagine they're going to keep the same shipping schedule, which is, you know, twice a month. Mm-hmm. So they'll probably have Humberto. He's going to be in a team like he has been. It's probably going to be him and a few other guys who do. You know, they'll do a few issues at a time, and then. You know, they release them every 2 weeks.
So, Humberto Ramos has been shipping 2 books a month?
No, not by himself. I'm saying that they'll do him, he'll do, they, you know, they load him up in ahead of time, and they give him a month or 2 months off, and then he, you know, will do 3 issues or something, and then someone else will do 3 or 4 issues. And then they'll have, like, there's like 3 or 4 different artists who work on it. Kind of, but not really. Hmm. It's not like he's doing all of them. They have a lot of guys who can, they probably have a team of guys who work very, rather quickly. I know Humberto Ramos does draw.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Quick. I mean, does he draw 2 books a month? I'm like, damn.
No, he doesn't. Although, the guy who's done Copra, which we need to read for Book Club. I think last year it's gotten such rave reviews.
Add it to the list.
It's on the list.
Lackey.
That guy was doing 2 books a month.
Anyone that can do that, my hat is off to him. That shit takes a lot of time.
Superior Spider-Man is... It's kind of just with the solicitations, and we're going to say what we already said about Superior. I'm not going to buy it until... We may pick up Amazing Spider-Man, but if it's Umberto Ramos drawing it, probably won't.
You don't want to read the triumphant return of Peter Parker?
We probably will.
I want to.
We'll probably go, the story is good, but I hate Humberto Ramos' art.
I'm not a fan, but I would give it a shot. It does not seem to me like they're going to give it to him for his return.
The cover of the first one.
Of which one?
I believe he's on the first Amazing Spider-Man. I think he's working on the first issue, I think, from what the solicitations say.
Hmm.
But you know what we're going to say, and the same thing with Daredevil came out this week. It's another very good book.
Mm-hmm.
It's wrapping up its run until then he's going to go to the West Coast. So I try and pick books that are going to, you know, have something for us to talk about that's new. If, you know, if we're going to check, we're checking into something to see if it continues to be good because we're not sure if it's going to, or we don't know the story's going to keep up the pace, or, you know, stuff like that, I'll keep reading. But when it, we've read several issues of Rat Queens, everyone has been good. It's gotten our year-end awards. People can buy it or not buy it on their own at this point. They know how we feel about it.
They don't need me to tell them what to do.
Not all the time.
Well, I will tell people what to do.
Well, it's okay. You can. We'll stop you.
Yep.
But that's it for Weekly Floppies. Oh, we're going to go to Nerd Boy Book Club.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, we read Marvel 16-02 by Neil Gaiman and with the pencils by Andy Kubert, painted by Richard Eisenhoff. It is very popular book. It's kind of an Elseworlds-type story. Basically, a lot of all the 60s Marvel characters, you know, set in the year 1602, political intrigue, and they meet historical figures, and we see what happens, presuppose if, you know, if they're in this time period, but they're still the same person, quote unquote. Eric, you already owned a copy of this, right?
Oh yeah,
me too.
I was very excited about this, and I have it in the original hardcover for when it was originally released.
That's interesting. I have a trade. I do not have the hardcover. Rereading it, did it change your opinion at all?
No, I think it's one of the best things that Gaiman has ever written. What was the book we were talking about? It was the Avengers World book, where there were all these different threads and different sections, like just tons and tons of characters, and they were jumping around from, you know, from segment to segment and showing these characters interacting with things. It was way too much, and it was done really poorly. This is that kind of storytelling done, I think, pretty near flawlessly in comic book form. Like, I can't imagine telling a story with this many characters any better than the way this is told. It's kind of remarkable how it starts out with all of these fragmented characters and bits of story, and it all really comes together to end in a way that is telegraphed from the very beginning of the story. I have always loved that about the way this was crafted.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to start. I have to agree with you that it is certainly a work of excellent craftsmanship. The fact that he was able to weave a story with this many, that is certainly a hallmark of this, is that there are many characters in this, and you never feel like you don't know what's, you know, who someone is or what they're moving. You kind of, they all work. It's like an excellent clock. Everything fits into place very well and ticks along. The story works wonderfully.
Yeah.
I haven't read this in a long time. And I got this, I don't even know when today. I know I was not really heavily into comics when I bought it. I was, you know, I was just dabbling. I was in the bookstore and I saw this and I went, it looks really cool. It's Marvel 1602.
Yep.
I did not know any, I don't remember knowing anything about Neil Gaiman in particular. I just, you know, I like Marvel. Ooh, it's like an Elseworlds. I didn't even think I know what that word meant then.
Right.
I picked it up. It looked cool, and I really liked it. And I don't think I like it as much this time.
I'm pretty unwavering. This is a book that I have read. Every couple of years, I pick it up and read it again. And okay. I think it still stands amongst Gaiman's best work, even though it does include one of Neil Gaiman's. It's interesting that he has one of his own tropes, which is gay angels.
I'm like, Angel wasn't gay.
Well,
he's
in
a playboy.
In Neil Gaiman's mind, all angels are gay, including dudes with wings.
I mean, he's not a real angel. He's just an angel.
Yeah, well, they're all different versions of themselves.
Yeah, that's, you know? I mean, that's the, I think that's the problem I came to rereading it, is that, like, you read the, I don't think I've ever read, like, the material beforehand, the little, I don't know if your version has this, like, there's, like, a whole big prologue time, like, an article by Peter Sanderson.
Yeah, mine has
that. Is that in there?
Yes, it did.
Okay, I've never read that before, and I read it, and then I read Neil Gaiman's afterwards, too, which I haven't read before.
I liked both of those things. I read them this time.
Yeah, they're very well written, and they certainly are applicable to the to the story. It seems like it's trying to have its cake and eat it too it's firmly rooted in this nostalgia of the, I mean, Neil Gaiman even just talks about him when he first was reading comics, his first, like, all the Stan Lee and Kirby and Ditko
that's
comics from the 60s. Right.
And that's what I liked that he had to say about that. That when he was young, that it was sort of this nascent, growing universe, and he wanted to create something with that sort of feel. That's what I like about this.
No, I mean, I don't have it. That's not real. I mean, my point is that a lot of these characters are exactly like their kind of their stereotypical behavior from that era. If you want to say, of how they acted, like how their characters acted in that era.
Right.
You know, it's, and then they're supposed to be transported from supposedly their inception, quote unquote, to 1602 because of this weird dimensional anomaly. At least that's how the story explains it, right? That's basically the right way to explain it,
I think.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not, they don't say specifically, obviously. It's just, you know, that it's the far future. Captain America, like, is transported into this time period, and because of his presence and this weird dimensional anomaly, all these other characters, like, appear. But I just think that, like, of all these, there's a lot of these characters, not many of them actually, like, have an arc. I mean, and it's almost impossible to do with this many. But, you know, Nick Fury has an arc. Certain Doctor Strange, Peter Parker to a certain extent, but all these people are just like, they are just coasting on what we know of them. And I'm not sure how I feel about that.
I think I'm willing to let it go personally.
Okay.
I just don't think you can, I mean, without putting in 10 times the content, I don't know that you can really go that deep into it.
That's true.
Particularly with like, maybe Reed Richards or something, who is just, like, a constant throughout the story. I mean, he's really barely in it. I mean, I doubt he's one of the ones you're talking about, even though I think he is, you know, he's constant. He's static.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Nick Fury, like, in that time, from the 60s, Nick Fury was not... He's a very straightforward, just a spy guy.
Yes.
This is definitely pulling from the time period it was written in, that kind of Nick Fury, this eyes and ears everywhere Nick Fury. And I don't really have a problem with using that. It's just a lot of the other Black Widow, Magneto, are very, like, just cartoonish villains for most of the story. And I don't know, it just... He paints some of these characters with a lot of depth and
Magneto is a cartoonish villain.
I know, but to pull Nick Fury from our more modern era and then pull the Magneto from the 60s, who is, very a cartoonish guy who hates humanity. It just is uneven to me. Like, you don't see the depth of these other characters, and I don't know if, like, why include Black Widow at all? She's just she has, like, one scene where she's actually, like, herself, quote-unquote. And then the rest is she's just Doom's, you know, wench. And Bruce Banner, he's barely in it.
He is Hulk with a mustache, though. Did you notice that in the one panel where he's Hulk, he has a mustache?
I did not see that.
It's amazing. That's what the Hulk has always needed.
the mustache
is a Renaissance mustache.
He does have one. I did not see it.
I never noticed it until reading it this time, and I'm like, Hulk has a mustache. It's Mustache Hulk.
That's good. That's funny. But that's my complaints. It's still very good. Very good story.
It just seems like a weird criticism, because I feel like anyone's gonna write it the way they're gonna write it. I mean, I think it's a valid thing to say, but I don't think it particularly needs to come from any one time period. I think it can just sort of draw from the whole mythos, and I think it's fine.
They're just some of these characters are mm-hmm. like the whole point of this story is like, look at the rich tapestry of the history of Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all these characters, and they work so well mm-hmm. and set in an entirely different time period.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them are just kind of flat and don't do anything. And
I think it's valid to say that, but not every character can be.
They're just window dressing.
Exactly. And that's your criticism, that they are window dressing and they shouldn't have even been included? Because I think you need somebody to be backdrop for something.
Yeah.
And I think Thor and Captain America and the Fantastic Four and, I mean, he picked the characters I would pick to have a story like this, and it's
certainly you would definitely. Those are the when you think Marvel, that's what you think of.
Mm-hmm.
You think of classic era Marvel. These are all the characters you would use. There's a few other things. After he gets rescued, they break out.
Uh huh.
And they're on the ship, and you know he is talking about maybe you can fix me. Richard, you know, maybe you can turn back to the man. And then he's like, no, you're more interesting.
Yes.
I'm like, that's... I know you love the power of stories and all that, Neil Gaiman.
It's...
No real person would ever say that.
Yes.
No one would go, no, you're a big giant rock monster. Your story is much more interesting this way.
I think that... to me, looking at it this time, I remember thinking about it, reading over that segment. It's kind of the character Reed Richards recognizing the fourth wall, even though I agree with you. It's a little wanky just for Neil Gaiman to be like, I love storytelling. I read it like that, but I also read it like, you know, Richards sort of seeing that he lives in a story that... a universe that favors stories. I don't know. Of all the characters, he seems like one that would notice that.
I just don't.
No, I know where you're coming from. It's a bit hammy. I understand.
And he says, this isn't Sandman. I'm very happy about that. Mm-hmm. In the afterword, it's not Sandman, but there's certainly the same thing. A lot of the same themes,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, that's in everything Neil Gaiman writes, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, mythology and mm-hmm. the power of stories,
mm-hmm.
you know, all that.
And gay angels.
And gay angels.
Neil Gaiman has his own tropes.
He does.
It's just, you know, it's who he is.
Yeah. We haven't talked about the art at all.
I really like the way this book looks.
Mm-hmm.
I think was Andy Kubert.
Yes,
I think he's done a good job on it. I don't really care for his style, but it's got a really great overall look, and the covers are pretty incredible.
Yeah, Scott McCowan.
Mm-hmm.
He did a whole bunch of a cover for each one, which are they're unbelievable.
They're done in scratchboard, and I remember that. Because I was learning to do scratchboard in college right around when these were coming out, and it really impressed me to see that. And they were doing this digital color on top of black and white scratchboard, and, I mean, to great effect. It was really nicely done. Really great illustration. What did you say his name was? I don't have it written
down. Scott McCowan.
Scott McCowan. I do recall that he's not a comic book illustrator, that he was someone that Neil Gaiman had found and asked to do the illustrations for these books.
That does not sound crazy to me.
Yeah, it sounds very much something Neil Gaiman would do, and it explains the look of these illustrations, which they have more. They're meant to emulate the look of an intaglio print.
Yes.
It was one of the only ways to print an image in the Renaissance. Scratchboard is not that, obviously. There's a lot more detail that you can get in a scratchboard versus a woodblock print or an intaglio. I think it actually is probably more to emulate a woodblock or something like that, a wood engraving. Mm-hmm. I think it was very successful and just really gorgeous. I think one of my favorite Marvel illustrations of all time is the one where it shows the constellations and Doctor Strange with the flag coming out of his mouth. Do you remember that illustration?
Mm,
it was for part 8 or part somewhere parts. No, it was part 6. I think it was.
Okay, one cover right for part there, 6. I'm looking through it.
Nope, not part 6.
Okay.
Part 6. I am dumb.
You're dumb?
I am dumb. It's part 7.
I think a big strength of this is the character designs.
Mm-hmm.
They're really, really good.
They're all really quite on the nose.
Yeah, really solid
mm-hmm.
period pieces, but still representing the characters very, very well. What's your favorite? I want to know.
I really love Captain America in this.
Do you?
That's my favorite reveal too. It's so uncanny how great it is.
Yeah.
It just delights me. The part at the end where he's done face paint with the big A on his head. I was just like, that is so awesome. I can't stand it.
I actually didn't like that.
That's because you're wrong.
I think that's funny though. That's something I would have predicted you would have not liked.
It's like hyperbole. I'm into hyperbole.
Okay. I don't know. I didn't like it.
It's okay. You can hate everything that's good.
I didn't say anything about the word hate. But my favorite was Daredevils.
Daredevil was pretty great in this. Although it did blow my mind that he's just like, I'm not afraid of anything. I'm going to eat some green stuff. Now I can't see.
Yeah.
It's senseless that he just eats it. He just eats it.
Well, he's a kid. Kids eat
shit. I know, but that's a dumb kid.
Most kids are dumb. I mean, even
I know,
the
smartest
kids
they just dumb they things. Deserve to be blind. If you're going to just walk in and eat something that is dripping off of a cave and glowing, then you're fucking dumb. I'm sorry. It doesn't matter when you were born. Even if you were born in the 16th century, if you're eating glowing shit off the walls of a cave, you are dumb. D-U-M, dumb.
His adult design, I really enjoyed it because it's very simple, yet it really works very well with his the character in this.
Keep your sticky fingers off of Ireland.
Keep your sticky fingers off of Ireland. So, among all the Elseworld type stories, you think this is the best one?
It is certainly one of my favorites. I'd put it up there with something as Red Sun. You know, it's that level of quality.
Yeah, I would put Red Sun above it, but it's.
I think you could make an argument. This I would put above Red Sun.
I think I like Red Sun more just because it's more focused.
Yeah, and I think that's just a stylistic choice.
Yeah, this is certainly the amount of skill required to have such a large ensemble
mm-hmm.
and tell a story that's this coherent.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell that Neil Gaiman has got better
as
a storyteller after Sandman was over.
Mm-hmm.
You can see his development as a writer in this.
Yes. You can, you definitely can. I mean, hell, you could see it in the last books of Sandman, that he was just, like, so confident in the shit he was writing. You know?
He got better, and this is, you can see it, that he's fully formed, like, as an artist, if any, an artist can ever can be fully formed.
Yeah, well, he had, you know, he had grown up enough as an artist.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess I could ask you about this. One of the things that we talked about being the strengths of this is the period costumes.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the period language? Does it impede it for you at all?
No, it didn't. In college, I had to read a lot of, mm-hmm. I had several classes, you know, where it's, all you read was stuff from this time period. So, this is not nearly as heavy as it actually is.
Yeah, I know.
Honestly. It's readable. Mm-hmm. It's, my only complaint really was the fonts a couple times. The lettering was, like in when Thor becomes that weird, sometimes that weird lettering
the,
they use.
The runic font. Yeah, I do like the shit he says in this, though. It's amazing.
No, but, yeah, the writing's good for it. It's just, it's hard to read.
I came to my favorite, probably my favorite dialogue bubble in this whole book, where Thor is like, "I am Thor of the Thunders, mighty my Mjolnir, fighter of frost giants, stronger than storms." That's so fucking cool.
It's very Thor.
It is very Thor.
But no, it doesn't bother me at all.
I just, it kind of made it a little opaque to me when the period, or the part at the end. I mean, and it makes sense that someone from that time period would call these different areas of scientific study, and we just sort of name them based off of whatever crap he was familiar with. In this place, it was the Arthurian legend.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know. They're galvanic. It's just weird. I don't know. I don't understand it. I wonder if is that actually rooted in history? Is that something that people actually did?
I don't. My history of science is not super strong, but I do know. I mean, to me, it sounds right. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the way that people describe biology and science in that time period was still pretty, you know, backwards in our modern way of thinking, but it felt, you know, right enough to me. I had no problem with it.
Well, apparently galvanic is related to electricity, and I think that actually, I wonder how rooted in reality all that jazz is, because Neil Gaiman he's kind of a word nerd. He's a nerd for a lot of different things. If you ever read Good Omens, there's a part where he calls attention to what the original definition of the word nice is. And he's got a lot of weird nuance like that, that he's like, well, that's not what this word means, you know? And mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe that's what this is.
No, it felt right to me. It didn't feel strange to me.
Hmm.
I mean, Neil Gaiman, certainly that you could have gone further and tried to make it more,
mm-hmm.
you know, of the time period, but I think it struck a good balance of having a little bit of colloquial old English.
Yes, it's not
going overboard. Right.
It's not done so much. It's not even as done as deep as say like V for Vendetta is.
No.
You know, where I can't even remember what that guy's accent was. But, like, he would always say, instead of girl, he would say gel. You know, mm-hmm. spelled it like gel. And I'm like, why is this guy saying gel? Like, I never got it. But Neil Gaiman, apparently, realizing he's writing for an American audience, knows that, you know, if he, like, wrote Matt Murdock with a really, thick...
You would not be able to understand him.
Yes, we would not get what he's saying at all. And it would have made a lot of sense for these characters to have all this speech flavor, but it could
have to actually understand the story.
Exactly. It would very easily just sound terrible to us, or not read very well.
And especially for this type of story, it's, I mean, firmly rooted in like Marvel history.
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly for a large audience.
Mm-hmm.
He made the right choice.
I think it's interesting that it eschews this kind of speech flavor, but they sort of make up for it with fonts.
Yeah, I think that's the idea.
Isn't that, I don't know, and I had never really thought about that.
I think that's to give it the flavor
that you're not
necessarily getting from the actual dialogue.
And it kind of works. Like, you hear Thor's voice. You hear Doom's voice. You know? You hear this just because of the way the text is done. And kind of when you get to the section where we see Uatu,
mm-hmm.
you're kind of bowled over. You're like, wow, we're kind of jumping back into reality here. It's jarring because the rest of the text is done all in upper and lowercase.
Right.
And he's in typical comic book uppercase.
Right. I was going to also mention that I was, you know, complaining about the characters being uneven.
Mm-hmm.
Doom, is funny because Doom is the same.
Yes. Doom is Doom is Doom is Doom.
Is Doom, yeah. And he always works.
Yes. Doom. Yes.
I mean, he's changed somewhat from the 60s to today. Not a whole bunch.
It doesn't need to.
He doesn't need to.
I don't know. Doom is the kind of person, he just needs to, like, shout everything and always be angry and punch people in the face and blow shit up.
We need to read Jonathan Hickman's run on Fantastic Four.
If it's got a lot of Doom in it, I'm all for it.
It's Doom becomes a god.
We might be announcing something.
I'm not even gonna say what he says about it. It's so good. Oh my god! I just thinking about it makes me smile.
How long is it?
It's lengthy.
Lengthy.
We might have to cut it in two, maybe, if we did it.
Chop it in half.
Anything else you want to bring up about 1602?
I don't think so. I think it stands amongst his best writing. It's my single favorite self-contained Neil Gaiman story in a comic book, I think.
Yeah, it's beautiful, and I'm trying to think of a good word for it.
It's galvanic.
It's galvanic, sure. It's a very good, it's like a summary of the entire Marvel universe. And yet it's set in a different time period. Like, it's strange. Like, you could give this to someone like who's totally unfamiliar with Marvel outside of knowing the names, and they would be able to, they'd love it. Without having any kind of, yet, like, it gets to the core of the characters to a lot of extent. While managing a huge ensemble cast and redesigning everything for a different time period. It works very well. A very good book.
Quite, quite good.
So, that was Marvel 1602. Neil Gaiman, Andy Kubert, Richard Eisenhoff. Covers, beautiful covers by Scott McCown, should be mentioned.
Totally.
Yeah. Gorgeous. Do you want to do a Hickman's run on Fantastic Four for the next couple weeks, Eric?
You know, why the hell not? I love the Fantastic Four. They are exactly what I think comic books should be. You know?
We'll have to talk about that too.
I'm looking forward to the discussions we're gonna have.
Yeah, so we'll do it in two halves, I think. I think we can just do it up to the end of Fantastic Four for the first week. I'll clarify in the text post. Eric and I will hash it out off air. So, folks, I think that will bring this episode to an end.
Neato Torpedo.
This is episode 36. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us on handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can find us on iTunes. Search Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us and only us. Leave us reviews. Subscribe to us. Both of those things are very, very good. We very much appreciate either of those things. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/HandsomeBoysComicsHour. Like us there. You can leave us comments. You can like our posts. You know, all that stuff's fun. You can also get us on the Tumblr at HandsomeBoysComicsHour.tumblr.com. You can also tweet at us at HBC Hour on the Twitters. And you can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Any of those places, please leave suggestions, criticisms, hate mail, any of those things. We like hearing from you.
I just want to go out there and say that I do love your hate mail.
All of it.
Yes.
We just like to hear from our audience. Let us know what you think.
Like to hear from my haters. Many haters.
Many haters. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. That's MIXMASTERCEREAL. And I'm on Tumblr, same name. Eric, where can they find you online?
You can find my portfolio at freewillunlimited.com, and you can see many of the other things I get up to online at ericzgoodnight.com. And you can tweet right at me, why don't you, at Mr. Bad Example. That is spelled MR Bad Example.
So, folks, till next time, have a good one.
Rock and roll.
Into a burning ring of fire. I went down, 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 and the flames went higher.